Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We're glad you could join us today, and we hope you learned something new or you reinforced some concepts that we talk about often. And today will be another Roth day. I am reminded every time I hear those in power currently talk about what they want to do. I don't hear too many talk about cutting taxes, unless, of course, it's former president, Mr. Trump, has been on the stump lately, and boy, has he got a doozy in terms of the hospitality industry. So we'll talk about that perhaps here in the show today. Before we get started, just want to remind you that, as with every show we do, and I'm going to suggest everybody on the air does, you should always consult with your professional advisors that know your specific facts and circumstances before you run off and try to do it yourself on any of the tax strategies we may discuss or investment opportunities that we may bring up. And I don't know that we'll have time today to talk about a current opportunity. I had a couple come across my screen this week. So if we get time here later in the show, we'll go over a couple of those, or maybe one of them. We're going to talk today. There was an article in Kiplinger here recently. Let me see. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't finish my disclaimer. For those of you that don't have advisors that you might feel like you can get some help on topics that we work with, real estate taxation, retirement plan taxation, and the use of your retirement money to invest in real estate, specifically private partnership projects that involve multifamily or apartments. And then lastly, we strive to get you to a zero tax rate scenario by the time you're getting to retirement. And may not be able to get you all the way to zero, but depending on your income streams, which is what we'll try to work on in the interim as you're approaching retirement, you may very well be among the fortunate folks that can get to a point where you owe zero tax when you get to retirement. It's quite a confluence of factors that benefit or that cause the benefit of not paying taxes. And by the way, along with not paying taxes in general on your income, we can help you avoid tax on your Social Security and at the same time the dreaded IRMA adjustment that you'll pay to the folks at Medicare if you're making too much of the wrong kind of income. And again, certain income escapes those two calculations. Well, they escape all three, the income tax, the tax on your Social Security, and the IRMA premium. Okay, so back to the article in Kiplinger. Was last updated June 13th, so a couple days ago. I forget when this one first came out. I think we talked about this article at one point, but the information that they updated is relevant and certainly applicable to our ongoing mantra, which is Roth conversion. You've got to get to Roth if you want to avoid the calamity that's confronting our nation. And I can't tell you that you'll totally avoid it forever and ever and ever, but at least you'll get started in the best possible position you can be in. And if you don't think tax rates are going up between now and, I don't know, minimum 2028 or 29, and it could be sooner. Just depends on how soon the folks running our tax policy and our economic policy get into the know, so to speak, on what's coming. And it's amazing to me how the deficit is just literally screaming upward. It's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Even the congressional agency, I guess you would call it, or congressional committee that tracks such matters is waving the flag. The Congressional Budget Office, CBO. And CBO recently updated their 10-year go-forward or 10-year forward-looking projection out to 2034. And it's not pretty. It's not pretty. We'll talk about some of the details here as we go through the article. The article that I'm referring to on Kiplinger is entitled Roth Conversions, the Case for and Against Them. And the subtitle is, Have You Been Tempted to Jump on the Roth IRA Conversions Bandwagon, or Roth 401? You could just as easily read. Check out the pros and cons to see if they make sense for you. And I'm going to tell you, we look at a lot of cases, and I'm not going to say there's none that would indicate the facts that we need to fully justify converting over to Roth, but I'll just tell you, if you have heirs that you want to provide a legacy benefit to, that pretty much means that Roth will apply to you. I can see other reasons where if you don't have any heirs, you don't really care about what happens to your money after you're gone. I mean, there are some people that fall in that camp. Then fine. Maybe you tough it out and you pay the additional tax that's going to be due. And I'm curious, do you think that tax rates, just curious, do you think that tax rates, and I'm not referring so much to what you're going to owe, let's just for the moment talk about tax rates. I know since I first came out of college at University of Houston back in 81 and 83, undergrad and grad degree now. I didn't go back for the bachelor's twice. But anyway, I've been hearing tax rates are going to go up. They're going to go up. Well, nobody really said they have to go up. And now we're at such a level of borrowing in this country. We're easily over the 100% mark of GDP, which has kind of been the gold standard for congressmen that would always, they would be asked, well, what do you think about this new piece of legislation that's being bantered around in Congress? What's it going to do to our deficit? And the typical response, or a common response, of course, many congressmen don't understand what that means. Okay, I'm convinced there's a whole raft of Congress folks that they really just think, hey, there's some ability to pay the money or we wouldn't be paying our bills now, right? So what does another few trillion dollars represent? By the way, you may be surprised to learn, or shocked or horrified would probably be the right word, to learn that the interest on the debt, just the interest, will for the first time in our history exceed the $1 trillion mark for this fiscal year that ends September of 2024. $1 trillion, I believe the exact number that's projected is like $1.1 trillion and some change, let's call it a few hundred million, would be change in this world. But in any event, for the first time in our history, we will pass the expenditure, the national expenditure for defense. We won't quite be to the level of Social Security. Well, actually, Medicare and Medicaid combined is the biggest expenditure in the current budget. Social Security would be second. And defense is at this second, real time, it's in the third position. But you got the interest on the debt coming up hard on the outside. And before the end of the year, it will be in the money, so to speak, in third position. That's incredible that we can sit here today and be talking about a annual current expenditure that exceeds $1 trillion. The only other two components we could talk about would be Social Security and Medicare/Medicaid, which we knew were huge and only getting bigger with the number of participants that are coming in, all the baby boomers that are flooding into those programs every day. So in any event, it's just crazy how fast we're closing in on where interest will soon, and I say soon, meaning over the next 10 years, according to the Congressional Budget Office. Again, that's a government agency that projects the financial or the budgetary impact of new legislation. They look at, well, with this, whatever this is, whatever proposal, will it pay for itself, typically, is what they're doing. And, of course, they try to predict things like new wars or skirmishes around the world, and obviously we're spending a ton of money on those. I don't think if you'd backed up, 5 to 10 years, you might, I don't know, maybe you would have, but I don't think you would have projected that we would be spending the level we are now on other nations' defense, and likely going to skyrocket once, if and when, I think it's when, China makes a move on Taiwan. And who knows, they're trying to pick a fight with the Philippines as well. But in any event, the current budget deficit, as we sit here this morning, the cumulative national debt, and I'm not talking about the true national debt, the unfunded component, just talking about the amount that we will admit to, the amount you hear on the news. You never hear about this unfunded mandates that we've already passed, because those aren't in the current year expenditure, the current year budget. It's only once they move to that level that then you'll see the number adjusted for what we, as the only advanced or developed nation that takes this position, meaning we don't report in our national debt, our U.S. national debt, we do not report the $100+ trillion that has already been baked in to the next X number of years. These provisions take effect over time, and it's just little things like indexing Social Security and indexing Medicare, certain government programs that for whatever reason don't kick in until 2, 3, 8 years down the road, whatever it is. But it's already been voted. It's already been baked into the statute. It will happen if we don't do something to modify or otherwise terminate it. But the current amount that we talk about in the news is $34,826,000,000+. And just for those of you that are curious how it relates to you, your share, if we looked at just simply the debt per taxpayer, is a whopping $266,952 for each of us taxpayers. Per citizen, if you counted every man, woman, and child, not just those that file and pay taxes, But for every citizen, it's over $103,000 at the moment, $103,379. And so maybe that puts it in a little bit more relevant terminology for you if you think about it per taxpayer or per citizen. Each member of your family theoretically has $103,379 for their share of the national debt per citizen. And again, if you look at the top four components that make up the current deficit, you've got you've got the Medicare and Medicaid. That's clocking along at almost $1.8 trillion in this year's budget. Social Security is up to $1.4 trillion. The defense expenditure is just under $900 million, $898 million. And interest on the debt, as we speak, for the current fiscal year, ended September 2024, is at $870 million. And that will, $870 billion. I'm sorry, I'm leaving off a whole set of zeros. That will go past the $1 trillion mark. And in fact, it's projected to go past the $1.1 trillion mark before the end of this fiscal year, September 2024. So again, I'm going to ask you, what do you think is going to happen to tax rates? And again, I've been hearing it for 40 plus years that taxes need to go up. Well, now they pretty much have to go up, and the problem we're getting to is we've borrowed so much money, we will have spent the rest of the discretionary portion of the federal budget that remains for any given year. We'll be spending it on the increased interest expense. Interest will be the number one expenditure of our current year fiscal budget as you move forward, according to CBO, again, the Congressional Budget Office, the umpire, referee, if you will, that calls the balls and strikes. They say, but the year 2034, we will have the interest expense in the number one, in the pole position of the largest budget items. It'll exceed Medicare, it'll exceed Social Security, and of course it's going to exceed defense later this year. So, you know, what are you to do? And that's why we talk about Roth conversions. Almost every week on this show, we mention you got to get to Roth. You've got to get your funds situated so that the income streams are not taxable, but it's not just that your income streams are not taxable. Those income streams include your Social Security, which, as you may be aware, if you're claiming Social Security, you'll pay tax on 85% of those amounts if you go over a certain level, depending on whether you're single or married, filing joint, of your overall income. And you don't have to be Warren Buffett to get over those levels, or Elon Musk for you billionaires out there. And so it's a significant amount of tax typically when you can least afford it. And I know a lot of my clients have come to us thinking that, oh, well, my taxes are going to go down as I get older because I'm not earning a W-2, or I'm not running a small business. And what they don't realize is that at some point their required minimum distributions kick in, and those are mandated under the current law to where you have to take portions of your retirement funds out and subject them to tax. It's not a question of, well, I need the money to live on it. No, you have to take it out. And that drives your income up, in many cases, over the threshold set for whether your Social Security is taxable, and a higher plateau, but it nonetheless affects many people is the IRMA premium, or the additional money that you pay Medicare for your coverage, and pretty significant in many cases. Let's do this. I went over on the first segment past the break. Let's go ahead and take that break, and we'll return momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
People always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little forgiving and love along the way. You better get to knowing, showing a little bit more concern about where you're going. There's a word unto the wise. You better get to living.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195. 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to Nathan at NPRoss.com. Nathan at NPRoss.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Song, Bobby McGee. I'm just longing to be free. Take me where I want to be. Big dreams and fake dreams. And there are many just like me
with big dreams and fake dreams.
Okay, welcome back to more of this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and we were just starting to talk about Roth conversions, which I probably should have mentioned applies to folks that currently have non-Roth retirement money. So if you've got an IRA that's a traditional IRA, if you have even non-deductible traditional IRAs, or if you have 401k accounts and monies, and I guess there's some other categories that could be applicable, some SEPs or simples IRAs. If you have retirement money in general that's in a non-taxable, or it's in a pre-tax state, meaning you got a deduction for it or otherwise did not pay tax on it, you really should look hard at Roth. And this article that we're talking about is a very high level. It doesn't consider things that I consider when I consult with a client on whether they should or shouldn't. And these are very simplistic scenarios. But in any event, generally, as the article explains, a Roth conversion is the process of moving money directly from a pre-tax account, such as a traditional IRA or 401k, to a post-tax account, i.e. Roth IRA, or could be a Roth, a 401. We like the 401 model, the self-directed 401 model, otherwise known in the marketing of said products, Solo K. Solo K is a marketing term, does not exist in the Internal Revenue Code or the regs that relate to those code sections. And we prefer language that's more germane to the language used in the Internal Revenue Code, which is a trust created pursuant to IRC, that's Internal Revenue Code, Section 401. And in any event, the Roth conversion strategy has picked up momentum in the last few years thanks to today's historically low tax environment. And I want to highlight that. This is one reason to do the Roth over almost any other time in your life. I mean, there's others, and I'll tell you, the biggest one is what we talked about in the preface leading up to this article. And we talked about how that the remaining portion of the annual budget, the discretionary portion, that we can actually direct to things that aren't already statutorily supposed to be paid this year. It's a small amount, granted. There's not a whole lot to fight over anymore, and it keeps getting smaller every day. And, of course, Congress keeps adding to the already committed programs and things that we agree to pay for. And that's really what's going to have to change in our country to avoid the disaster that's looming. It's like a big train coming down the tracks. And unless we can change this to systemic policy priorities within our country's economic picture, i.e. what are we willing to spend taxpayer money on, unless we can change that, and I mean in a big way, we're going to have a major financial disaster by the year 2028, 29, or 30, depending on just how bad the inflationary effect continues, depending on interest rates, depending on the rates that we're renewing debt that's maturing now. We're replacing those bonds. You don't think we're paying them off, do you? The debt keeps going up. So to the extent we're not paying it down, we're selling new treasuries to replace what we had to temporarily, I guess, pay off if somebody didn't want their funds to be invested in additional debt. And so depending on that interest rate, we can get there a lot sooner. We'll get there in 2028, perhaps, versus 2029 or 2030. But we will get there. We will not go past, under most economic assumptions, we will not get past the 2030 year without the remaining portion of that annual fiscal budget that's discretionary being consumed. And so what does that mean? Well, the biggest impact is that unless we decide to simply forego paying other necessities and pay all the interest on the debt, let's assume it's just business as usual and we continue to try to pay for everything the way we are now, which we're borrowing on average, you know, the 10-year forecast that I alluded to earlier that CBO announced here recently, I believe it was a couple months ago, it projected on average $2 trillion a year deficits out for the 10-year period in to 2034. And it's up a little a couple years, or it's up a little most years. It's down a little a couple years. Like, I think it drops to 1.7, 1.8. But for the most part, it's over $2 trillion a year for the next 10 years, at least. We'll most likely be longer. It depends on what we're going to do. But as Representative David Swikert indicates, and by the way, we've got some of Mr. Swikert's videos out on our website at baplannershow.com. If you go to the resources tab and go to the videos page, you're going to see Representative Swikert. He's a Republican from Arizona. He does copious charts and has really easy to understand explanations in 30 to 45 minute video content. And you really should take some time. If you don't believe what I'm telling you, and I'm just kind of hitting the high points, if you want to know the details as to what's coming, go look at those videos and, you know, bug your congressman or congresswoman, as the case may be. Let's get their attention to what is going to be a major calamity in our nation. And, you know, we've got, if this were all we were dealing with, it's a massive undertaking. But when you layer on the need to spend more militarily, foreign aid, et cetera, and all the other things that we're wanting to pay for with taxpayer money, it's a tall climb. It's a very tall climb. And like Mr. Swikert indicates, you know, his Democratic brethren and sisters will say, well, you know, we've got to charge the wealthy their fair share on taxes. You know, you could take all the wealth of the wealthy, and it's not going to move the needle on this issue, on the debt, the cumulative financial debt of the U.S. And then you've got Republicans that will say, well, we've got to cut out things like foreign aid. You know, we just don't have the money anymore to pay the foreign aid. Great. Cut that out too, and tax all the wealthy on their wealth or their income or whatever measure you want to use. You know, I know there's assorted proposals. I believe Senator Warren, Elizabeth Warren from Massachusetts, former U of H law professor, I believe, if I recall, suggests taxing wealth, I think, and taxing income. But the problem is, it's like, I believe it was Margaret Thatcher that said, you know, there's only one problem with taxing the wealthy or taxing people in general is that they run out of money at some point. So what are you going to do then? And but in any event, as Representative Swikert shows you with the math, you could do all the above. Tax whoever you want at how much you want. Quit spending money on foreign aid. No more Ukraine money or any other country's money. I mean, it's interesting when you look at the problem we're dealing with at our southern border, how much money we're pushing down to Central America and other nations. But the countries that we're getting, I guess, the majority of the immigrants from, we're giving them huge amounts of money now, supposedly, to avoid their folks wanting to leave their country and come to ours. So it's kind of hard to understand what are we getting really for that money. You know, maybe we use that money to build a stronger, higher, longer wall that prevents people from coming in or forces them to come through legally. You know, I'm not sure who's against legal immigration. I know I'm not. I love having hardworking people. And let me tell you, folks, we need a lot of hardworking people legitimately in the system, getting W-2s or 1099s and paying their respective self-employment tax, because our Social Security and Medicare is in bad shape. More near term than even 2034, we've got major issues with both of those programs. And if they're not stopped, the issues, meaning if we don't deal with them and solve them, by 2033 or 34, I believe it is, Social Security will be cut. It's already in the current statute. It'll be automatic somewhere between 23 and 25% across the board will be cut from the monthly Social Security recipient's check. We've got too few people now working towards remitting Social Security out of their paychecks and Medicare to cover the number of people that are currently claiming Social Security. And it's only going to get worse because our population is declining, among other reasons. You know, we've got some inflation that's going on that's not helping, as you may know. It's not like we're saying, hey, close the door and don't let anybody in. How about we close the door and not let criminals in? Or how about we close the door and not let people that have significant disease come in? You know, we can admit good people. I'm convinced of it. I run into immigrants here in Houston. We have immigrants in Thailand, where I live much of the time. Myanmar is our Mexico over there. And for whatever reason, you know, we don't have the same problem in terms of unfettered access to our border. It's funny how a little country like Thailand, maybe 70 million people, can require a passport every time I not only come into the country, but if I want to go rent a hotel or if I want to go get a cell phone, I got to produce my passport. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, I don't just have to pay you the money? You want to make sure I'm supposed to be here before you give me some of those privileges? And I'm thinking, how in the world can we Americans, who are arguably wealthier and arguably as smart, if not smarter, my wife and I have that discussion at times, my Thai wife, and I will fully stipulate she's smarter than I am, even without not a day in college, just common sense kind of smarts, and having to do things. When you grow up without things like, you know, we had, you know, something breaks, you got to fix it. You don't have anywhere to go. You can't go buy a new it, whatever it is. And it's just a different mindset. And I'm reminded every time I think about our current sanctions, you know, the sanctions that Mr. Biden claimed was going to shut Putin and Russia down. No, it hasn't. It's like I said a year and a half ago, or whenever they first enacted them, said it here on the air, that those sanctions are going to hurt the American people more than we ever thought it would hurt the Russian people. Because American people, especially those living in a cocoon like Washington, they don't understand the rest of the world does not live like we Americans, where if you cut our power off for a few days, we go berserk. Whereas in other countries, they often grow up without power. It's not a matter of doing without it for a few hours or a few days. And it's like my wife told me once when our subdivision we live in there had a planned outage because they were replacing some equipment on the electrical grid of several hours. I was taking a shower with a couple 2-liter bottles of water, throwing it up on your head, and packing up my computer and whatnot to head to the nearest Starbucks and or mall that might be open that had air conditioning. And my wife said, boy, you Americans wouldn't last long if your power ever went down, right? And I said, you are absolutely correct. I don't dispute that at all. So, you know, the bottom line is Putin's wealth has only increased. Biden was never really serious about the sanctions, or we would have done some real sanctions. We're still sanctioning. It's like, well, how could we possibly have any stone left unturned this long after we announced the first sanctions? And I remember reading where people, you know, people that were in the know said if Biden were really serious about sanctions, he would have included all the oil that apparently we were even still importing from Russia. And I can't remember those details, and maybe some of you trader clients I have out there can educate me. But, you know, we're still not truly sanctioning, and it really doesn't matter. There's other people in the world that buy oil in significant quantities than we do. And, you know, you would think the price of oil would have gone to, you know, $8 bazillion a barrel instead of the 90s or wherever it's at now. I believe that's where we're at. If you had backed up 20 years and said, hey, here's what's going to happen in the Mideast and in Russia and in Venezuela and some of the other big oil-producing states, in our country, how about in our country? Self-induced errors, I think they call it in tennis, right, if I'm not mistaken. It's amazing to me how we think at times. We're just not rational when you compare it to the rest of the world. Is it a marvelous country we have? Yes, it is. But we lose sight of the fact at times that the whole world doesn't have our luxuries and doesn't have our systems and our ability to produce, but they have the ability to survive. And that's something that I really question at times with our own situation. Let's do this. Let's go ahead and take a quick break. It'll be our last break for the day, and we will come back momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
I was gonna be rich no matter how much it cost, and I was gonna win no matter how much I lost.
Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be A Planner show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to nathan@npross.com, nathan@npross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. But I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up?
Hey,
oh, no.
Welcome back to the final segment here of the Be A Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We've got about 10 minutes left, so I want to quickly get through this Roth conversion material. The idea behind a Roth conversion is that you're going to prepare by paying taxes. You're going to prepay taxes today to avoid paying them in the future. And I'm going to disagree with some points here in the article real quick. This is one right here. It says the only reason this would make sense is if you believe your future tax rate will be higher than your current tax rate. That's just not the case. And here's further the reason why it's not. They say in the article, time horizon is not a factor, despite what you might read. It is simply a bet. Current tax rate, less than future tax rate, or future tax rate, less than current. And I'm just telling you, the resulting hypothesis here is the challenge is that there is no definitive yellow tag saying when and how much those rates will go up. I'm here to tell you, we do have the yellow tag. They're going up in the next 5 years. They have to go up. It's the math. It's not Democrat. It's not Republican. It's the fiscal math of this country. And if you think the tax rates will not go up, you're in for a rude awakening. And even if you thought it wasn't going to happen in the next 4 or 5 years, like I'm saying, you know, you've got a partner right now in your retirement funds. If you have pre-tax funds, how much does your partner, i.e. the government, own of your little partnership with the government on your retirement funds? You don't know. You have no idea unless you do it today where you know the tax brackets, tax rates. You really don't know what that partner is going to cost you. The only way to know is to do a Roth conversion now, or worse, take your money out. Then you'll find out what your partner is going to demand. And the Roth conversion can be done without penalty. That's one difference. If you just took your money out, if you're under 59 and a half, you're going to pay a penalty. So moving on to two examples, the case for Roth conversions. You're in a tax valley. Your taxable income might be lower than it has been in decades. And this, again, is the way the article explains it. I explain it a little bit differently because I'm looking at a looming life expectancy that you have. If you're male, 85 to 86 is your projected life expectancy. Even the IRS's tables will show you at that. Females, 87, 88. If you're sitting here today at 50-something, you've got a lifetime, literally, to continue to have money to pay your bills. And unless you plan on continuing to work till you're 80 years old, that's a problem. And so if you're having it chewed up, the tax rates, there's no question. I mean, again, don't believe me. Believe the Congressional Budget Office. They suggested back in 2009 in a report to Congress, which you can go read online, that the 10% bracket, there were three brackets back then, the 10% bracket would need to go to 25. That's 150% increase. The 25% bracket back then would need to go to 63%. Now, how much money did you say you had in your IRA or your 401? How would you like the IRS getting 63% or as much as 63% each year when you take those required minimum distributions? Does that change the way you think now about paying taxes in the future instead of paying it now when we've got one of the lowest possible tax rates that we've had in your lifetime? And then lastly, the CBO back 2009, the report they provided Paul Ryan, Speaker of the House and Congress, showed the highest bracket back then, the 39% bracket, needing to go up to 88%. That's no state tax yet. If you're in California, Arizona, New York, It's amazing how high. And that was then. That's back when we only had a deficit of maybe $8 to $9 trillion cumulative deficit, or borrowing, cumulative debt. And then that was also when we'd only borrowed maybe, I don't know, 50% to 60% of GDP. So we were nowhere near in the position we are today. So when somebody says, well, I've heard all my life that tax rates are going to go up, and they never do. Well, you know, I understand that. I can say the same thing. But back then, you couldn't point to the cumulative debt that our country had undertaken as being anywhere near as egregious as it is. And you couldn't point to GDP, where we had borrowed over 100% of GDP. Different scenario. Anyway, in this first example, all of the things being equal, when in this case, this example, if your taxable income is going to go up, i.e. the tax bracket, then there's a window of opportunity here. Let's call it a tax sale. The tax brackets are on sale, and you should consider moving all or part of your pre-tax funds over to Roth. That's one scenario, and this is one of the scenario. This is the case for the Roth conversion. Number two, it's not just your income is maybe in a tax valley. I don't at all agree that that's only the only reason you should do it based on income. I would tell you whatever your income is, if you plan on living and if you plan on passing money on to your heirs, you need to consider Roth so that you don't pass your heirs a tax problem if you've got the money to pay the tax and maybe they don't. Secondly, another reason to do it, as I just mentioned, is if you believe tax rates will go up. And as the article says, boy, are people passionate about this one, whether it's our ballooning debt, the upcoming election, or the fact that our current tax code is set to expire on December 31st, 2025, which is not really, that's a little bit overboard in saying the entire tax code is going to expire. But in any event, the pre-2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act rates will be back in play. Go up slightly, but yes, we'll have the old number of tax brackets, so you might be in a zone there where it goes up 3 or 4%. Okay, case against Roth conversions, very high level. You're in your peak earnings years. I would still suggest it might make sense. And then secondly, you're not liquid. Well, that's true. You do need to pay for the conversion, preferably with funds outside the Roth. Well, we're at the end of the show. We will continue to beat the drum on Roth conversions, and we may circle back to this article in more detail and give you some other reasons that they overlook. Hope you can join us again this coming Thursday right here on AM 700 KSEV at 2 p.m. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.